Hi, this is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief. You're listening to ThisWeekInGeek.net. Finish the fight.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of this week and kink. This week and kink.
Hey guys, what's going on? You're listening to This Week in Geek. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dodd. Well, guys, over the past little while, I've had a chance to interview some really cool people. Most recently, I had a chance to talk with Alan Tudyk of Firefly, and most recently of Con Man fame, and I'm kind of getting back into the groove of talking with people in the world of entertainment. One of the people I just got offered to talk to is a guy whose work I've actually been familiar with for quite some time, but I couldn't put a name and a face to the role, but I knew the voice. So my good friends over at Shout Factory, Tom, managed to hook me up with Mitchell Whitfield, and this is the guy, you may know him as the voice of Visa, Comcast, Coke, McDonald's, Suzuki, American Express, and of course the body built by Burger King, because hey, I'm a chunky guy. He's also done some stuff in video games. He's been in a lot of really cool movies, one of my favorite ones from the 90s actually, and he was also done some stuff with the Ninja Turtles franchise, and most recently, the Transformers franchise. So I want to welcome to the show Mitchell Whitfield. Mitchell, how are you doing, man?
Mike, I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. And there is no shame in enjoying the occasional Whopper. I just want to let you know that. There's no need to feel shame for enjoying Burger King. Many of us do.
Oh, man. It's so weird just to hear voices that I hear on the radio or on television and just to find out they've done so many other cool things. And I'm really excited to, like, talk with you, Mitchell, because I look at your, like, IMDb, and you've been doing stuff since I was a kid. And it's just, it's really cool just to see some of the stuff that you've done, because one of the TV shows you worked on very, very early on is a box set I got last year for Christmas, and it was a television show called Monsters.
Oh my gosh, Monsters. That was, I actually did Monsters before I even left New York, and I left New York around 25 years ago. So yeah, you're going pretty far back with Monsters. And whenever you talk about Monsters, which was a, you know, great in the vein of sort of like Twilight Zone shows or supernatural type shows, I hear that creepy intro music whenever anyone mentions that, and I haven't heard Monsters mentioned in a long time, so I'm glad it's something that you liked. It was definitely a lot of fun, one of the earlier television shows I ever did.
Absolutely, and then turns out in the 90s, you also did some more shows I watched, and I'm almost embarrassed to mention this, because I think I had a bit of a crush on this, and this is really going to make me either look awesome or really friggin' weird.
Or both.
Or both. You were on Murder, She Wrote. Not going to say. Jessica Lansbury. Not going to lie. She's kind of hot for an old lady.
Yeah, there's a certain talented hotness to her. Now, the funny part is, I was just talking about this earlier today, when I look back and I realized I was on shows like Murder, She Wrote around the same time Diagnosis Murder, I start to think of myself, I don't think, wow, I've really had a long career. I just think, man, I'm old. When I start talking about those shows, I feel really old. But you know what? It's a cool thing to be able to look back on and to work with great people like Angela Lansbury and Dick Van Dyke and legends of both, you know, theater, film, television. It's definitely good memories for me. And I had a fun time working on the show.
Yeah, because, like, that's one thing I've noticed looking through your career. You've worked with a lot of really talented people. I mean, one of the roles that shows up on your IMDb page, I remember watching this movie when I was in high school for law class, if you can figure that one out. We watched My Cousin Vinny. So you got to work with Joe Pesci.
I sure did. That's, you know, when you do interviews and you get asked a bunch of different questions about doing certain roles that you're remembered for, and I was answering some questions recently, and you think about it, if you look back, if any actor looks back on their career, and if you can find a couple of iconic roles or a couple of iconic franchises or movies, and for me, you know, looking at My Cousin Vinny, which we shot in late 1990, early 1991, and then, you know, of course, I'm sure we'll get to talk about Friends later on, and, you know, in the interview, but I feel really lucky because a lot of actors, you don't get those sort of shows or those TV shows or movies that 20, 30 years later, 25 years later, people still remember and people still talk about. It's so funny. I'm walking around and someone will recognize me from My Cousin Vinny because it's on television still every week. And for a movie that's been around for, you know, going on three decades, that's pretty special. So I feel pretty lucky that I've worked on some of these things that thankfully people like yourself still remember, you know?
Well, absolutely, because it's one of those movies that when you think about the decade of the 90s, it's one that comes up, I'd say, fairly often because it's one of those iconic movies.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you also look at some of the people you worked with in the 90s. You got to work on Blossom, which was a fantastic sitcom.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my favorite shows kind of growing up. But another one that I'm surprised more people don't talk about this one, but you had a chance to work on the short-lived, but I thought it was really funny, The George Carlin Show.
Yeah. You know, I had forgotten about that because it was such a long time ago. And I just remember being on the soundstage and talking with him. And I just had like a small guest star bit on the show. But, you know, I think they'd reproduced this this New York Street inside one of the soundstages. And I'm just sitting there on one of the stoops that were part of the set talking to George and some other people. And growing up, and I have a feeling I'm a bit older than you, you know, listening to George Carlin, as you know, listening to his albums as a comic and seeing his early HBO specials. For those that remember when he started out on HBO, when they first started doing their comedian specials, he was one of the early ones. And I just remember watching and thinking, oh, my God, this is so talented. And then you fast forward to later on in your career, and you're actually getting to work. And I'm kind of – this is what people don't realize. Even though I'm in the business and I'm an actor, I'm a fan just like you are and just like your listeners are. So when I get to work with some of these people, I have to suppress the fanboy in me from going, oh, my God, I'm working with George Carlin or Joe Pesci or look, it's Angela Lansbury, and suppress that. And sort of just play it off cool, like, oh, yeah, this is just somebody that I'm working with, a fellow work, you know, like going to the office and a fellow worker. But it's not. It's really sometimes very hard to suppress your inner fanboy when you're working with these people that you grew up idolizing. So it's a lot of fun. And I think half of the acting is acting like I'm not nervous or I'm not impressed getting to work with half of these people, you know?
Like I said, the comedic legends you've had a chance to work with. I mean, another one, I remember seeing this movie in theaters, Sergeant Bilko with Steve Martin.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the funny part was I didn't really have a lot to do in Sergeant Bilko, but it was directed by Jonathan Lynn, the same director who directed My Cousin Vinny. So they said to me, well, you know, would you like to do a part in Sergeant Bilko? Now, you know, when you have the luxury of being offered a role, that's a nice thing in Hollywood where a lot of, you know, the top celebrities still audition for a lot of things, which a lot of people don't realize, but they do. So when you're offered a role, it's a wonderful compliment. And plus, it was someone that I enjoyed working with already. Plus, I got to meet and work with Steve Martin, who is probably one of the most talented humans on the planet. For people that don't know, they just know him from, you know, some of his movies. But he obviously started as an incredible stand-up. We remember him from Saturday Night Live. And also a great author, a brilliant writer, and a great playwright. He's had plays produced in New York for years now. Just incredible. So, yeah, I'm kind of like you. I stand back and I go, wow, that was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, one of the cool things is being a smaller time actor, and I don't say that as to take anything away
How
from your
dare
career.
You, sir.
You get a chance to see Hollywood from an entirely different perspective, not from necessarily being all high and mighty, but you get to be a performer and appreciating who you're working with at the same time. I can see that being very rewarding from a career standpoint, but also, as you said, just by being a fan, you get a chance to do stuff with these people.
Oh, absolutely. And I think everyone in the business, to an extent, has a decent appreciation for what we do and how fortunate we are to be doing that. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, Tom earlier, and I was talking to Tom earlier today about, you know, my place in the business and how I feel. And I really feel very fortunate because in this industry, You could be starring in a TV series 1 week and then not work for the next 2 years. It can be a very humbling industry. So the fact that I've been around this long and I've been able to do things over the years, it not only obviously helps me out on a financial and a human level, but I'm very appreciative of that, because in this industry, nothing is owed to you. You know, nothing. You work 1 week, you could be starring in something 1 week, and that in no way guarantees future employment. It's just one of those businesses that works that way. So I think for the times that we are working, we're very grateful, and we're, you know, putting a lot of our heart and soul into it. But it really changes your perspective, because I think sometimes, especially in Hollywood, there's this feeling of entitlement that the business owes us something, or we're owed this and owed that. And I think the people that actually appreciate the work and look at it from that point of view probably have a healthier outlook for the rest of their career.
Absolutely. So one of the shows you also had a chance to work on, which you become a part of that show's canon and part of a significant storyline, is you were on Friends. So how did that come about?
I was actually up for the role of they were interested in me for both Ross and Chandler.
Wow.
Finally, they decided, you know what, we think he's more of a Ross. And I tested for the show, and they were very interested in me doing Ross. And then at the last minute, they're like, you know what, we have one more guy we're bringing in named David Schwimmer. We're going to audition him. We still love you, Mitchell. And of course, you know, the rest is history. But that's how they knew me, from auditioning for both Ross and Chandler. So when they ended up going with David Schwimmer for Ross, they said, you know, we still love you, Mitchell. We would love you to do the part of Barry. And of course, I wasn't going to say no. It's one of those rare scripts that I read. I remember reading the script and calling my agent and saying, yeah, this thing is going to be a huge hit. My agent said, really? I was like, absolutely. I've only said that twice in my life. Once when I read the script for Field of Dreams, and once when I read the pilot script for Friends. And I have to say, I'm 2 for 2 in my predictions, so I can never predict anything again, so I can keep my 100% record.
Man, so one of the other things that I've noticed you've done, not just being in front of the camera, you've also done stuff behind the microphone, too. I noticed very early on, you did a show, once again, one of my favorites that come out of the 90s, Duckman, which is a show nobody talks about but really should.
I think that was another one where I think I was up for the lead in the show. There are a lot of these where I've had a very interesting career where I've been up for the lead in a lot of these things. And when that doesn't happen, I end up getting a different role. I think Duckman was one of those. I think Angry Beavers is one of those. But, yeah, Duckman was hugely popular. Jason Alexander, of course, I believe played the lead in that, and he was wonderful. But, I was pretty lucky to get an animation early on, but it didn't really take hold for me in terms of being more of a full-time thing until actually like the last 3 or 4 years when animation has really taken off for me. But, yeah, Duckman was a blast. I think a lot of people don't remember it, but they should. It was definitely a good show.
So some of the other roles that you've done in animation, you got to play one of the most iconic comic book heroes, at least from my childhood, because I had all the toys, like you wouldn't believe. You starred in TMNT back in 2007. You were Donatello. Like, were you like a fan of the franchise, or was this just another gig?
I was a huge fan. It was a big deal at the time, especially because I was a fan. I have two younger brothers that were both fans. They were both Ninja Turtle fans. And it's one of those things when those opportunities come up, and we all have the four turtles in our heads and what they sound like. Yeah, cowabunga, dude, come on, guy. You know, we all know what they sound like. And we could all, you know, we've all imitated those voices at one time and another in the privacy of our own home or in the shower or wherever it is you do your own voices. I'm not judging. So to have the opportunity to actually do it, and, of course, later on we're going to fast forward to Transformers as well. It's a very similar thing where it's an iconic franchise that you grow up loving and being a part of from a fan's perspective. And then now I actually get to do that. And along with that, you know, there was a little bit of a responsibility that goes along with that because they're such beloved characters. People, you know, and you know this as well as anyone, fans are ravenous when it comes to TMNT, Transformers, those franchises. Fans are very protective. They also know in their head what they want them to sound like, what they should look and sound like. So there was a little bit of a responsibility on my part to make sure I didn't suck and didn't ruin the legacy of Donatello, but I was really happy with the way it turned out. I watched it, and usually for an actor to watch or listen to something of their own, it's hard to watch or listen to. It's like, oh, all you can hear is the mistakes. So for me, once I listened to it, I was like, you know what? Yeah, it kind of sounds like Donatello. That sounds really cool.
Now, did you have to go back and, like, look at the others that had come before you, or, like, did you want to make this your Donatello?
You know, I think for the most part, I had an idea in my head of what I remember Donatello sounding like, and I think if you ask any actor a similar question, where would they go back and try and emulate that? I think most of us would say no. We don't try and go unless somebody is saying specifically, look, we want you to, you know, it's a continuation of that story. I know we're hiring you, but we want you to sound like that guy. Could you make sure you do a voice match for them? That's a specific thing, though, that they may ask you to do. But when you're starting fresh, or you're starting a new version of, a new iteration of another, you know, an existing franchise, I think you want to put your own little spin on it. So I had a healthy idea of what it should sound like in my head, in my mind's ear. And I just kind of went with that, because otherwise you're just sort of rehashing someone else's performance. And like I said, unless they're specifically asking for that, I think most actors would want to kind of make it their own, you know?
Mm-hmm. So one of my other questions involving TMNT, has there ever been any interest to maybe do something for the new Nickelodeon show that's on right now?
You know what? They haven't asked, and I haven't been sitting by the phone. You know, and you know what? When I heard they were doing, I think all the guys that actually did TMNT, the feature, the CGI feature, we all auditioned for the Nickelodeon version. But we weren't surprised that they went another direction, because when you think about it, when there's a new team involved on a new, on an existing franchise, if they're making, okay, now we're going to reboot it and do it as a TV series, when there are new producers in place, when there's a new network in place, a TV network as opposed to the movie that we did, you know, people want to put their own stamp on it, and putting their own stamp on it usually means bringing in their own people and recasting, starting from scratch. So knowing the business as well as I do, I mean, I was disappointed. I would have loved to have played the role in the TV show, but I wasn't upset, because I know the way things work. And like I said, when a new bunch of people come in, a new creative team comes in to take it and make it into a TV show, you kind of expect them to put their stamp on it with their people. So I would have loved to have done it, but it's okay that I didn't. I'm happy I got to do the movie.
Well, maybe they'll give you a call for another role, because, hey, the TMNT universe is absolutely huge. I'm actually in my studio. I have a huge TMNT.
I thought you were going to say underwear for a minute, so I'm glad you said studio, so go ahead.
I have this ridiculously huge display of action figures, and I'm just kind of looking through them right now, just thinking, I could picture him doing that voice. I'm also looking at my comic book shelf, thinking, I could totally see that. So, you know what, and that's kind of the neat thing about working in animation, is that you can literally be anybody. And one of the other franchises you got involved with, yet another one that I grew up with, Transformers. So how did that one come about?
That's sort of a dream come true. I mean, I told you about Donatello and being a Turtles fan. I was even more of a Transformers fan, especially Beast Wars. I don't know what it was about Beast Wars, but every once in a while I just hear in my ear, like, terrorize. Yeah, I hear that voice in my head. Takes me right back to watching the show. There was something about that specific version of the show that I really loved. So when the audition came up for Transformers, and I was auditioning for a couple of things. I was auditioning for both Fix It and for Denny. And I'm very happy I ended up getting Fix It, because everyone on the show was perfectly cast. We had Ted McGinley ended up playing Denny, which is one of the two humans in the show, and he's a brilliant actor. And it was one of those things where as soon as I found out, I sort of had to step back and go, wait a minute, I was lucky enough to be a Ninja Turtle. Now I'm going to be a Transformer? This is too much. And, of course, I show up for the first session, and we're all there, and everyone, and like us, we have an amazing cast. Will Ferdell as Bumblebee, Constance Zimmer as Strongarm, Darren Criss as Sideswipe, Kari Payton as Grimlock, Stuart Allen. We just have an incredible cast. But then, of course, in the first episode, we have Peter Cullen, who's been the voice of, you know, Optimus Prime from the beginning. So as soon as he gets behind the mic and we hear Bumblebee, all of us get goosebumps and we're giggling like schoolboys. It's hysterical. All of us have been in the industry for years, but as soon as he opened up his mouth and uttered his first Bumblebee, we all went nuts. We were giggling. It was like I'd never been in the business. It was just so much fun. And that's the kind of fun we have in the studio every single week, where we all get along great. We have brilliant writers, great actors. And it's like, you know, getting to play with your friends and professionally getting paid for it every week. It's one of the best gigs I've ever had.
So what are some of maybe the fringe benefits of working on a kid's show like this? Like, do you ever get a chance to maybe, like, hey, here's your action figure or something like that? Because that's something I've never asked any of my, like, franchise interviewees. Like, do you guys get cool stuff out of this? Because you surely must get something.
Oh, come on. I mean, of course. And as a fan myself, the first thing I was, the first thing I'm asking, and of course I was putting the horse before the cart, is like, okay, so I know we're just starting to record, but when do our toys come out? And that was the first thing I wanted to know because, you know, having, you know, I have a son and a daughter. My son Ryan is 12 and a half. My daughter Sam is 10 years old. And a lot of the movies and stuff that I've been in, you know, maybe is not appropriate for them at their age or, you know, stuff that I'll show them when they get to be a little older. So they weren't around when Daddy was doing most of his movie, you know, movie roles and TV roles. So for me to be able to show them this stuff, for them to be, you know, a part of this and being the audience and being not just the core audience, but if you ever watch Transformers, especially, you know, our version, Transformers Robots in Disguise, it really is one of those shows that I think is entertaining for kids, but really does have enough content, not mature content, but content that the adults will appreciate and understand. So it's one of those shows that everybody sort of gets involved in. And the first thing I asked for, when is the toy coming out? And all the other bots were teasing me, especially Will Friedle, who plays Bumblebee, is like, oh, you know, you'll be a cardboard cutout on the adventure pack. I was like, don't you ever say that. I'm getting my own figure. And when they announced that Fix-It was getting a figure, of course, I had to, like, buy it and put it right in his face. But they sent us figures, and Hasbro takes very good care of us. I mean, that, as a fan, that's the, like you said, it's the first thing I thought of. So, yes, we've been very fortunate. We get to have our toys of our own characters, and I think my wife is tired of me holding up and saying, look, honey, this is really me. She's like, I know, honey, I know, that's really you. So, but it's a blast for me, you know?
Like I said, that is so cool. It's nice to hear someone who's genuinely a fan of the something that they work on. Like, you've been a Ninja Turtles fan, you've been a Transformer. Is there any franchise you'd maybe want to do next? Because I've noticed you've also done stuff in DC. You've done stuff as part of the kind of Hellboy universe. Is there anything else you'd want to do?
You know, that's a good question.
Any Marvel stuff?
Well, I was going to say, I grew up, I read both DC and Marvel growing up. And but there are some franchises in Marvel that I'm also ridiculously attached to. So to be part of the Marvel universe at some point would be wonderful. But it's hard. It's hard because in my mind, it's sort of looking past and appreciating and being in the moment for what I'm doing now and really enjoying. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like the first time, when we start looking past that and be like, well, I'd really like to do that. But yeah, of course. I mean, growing up reading Marvel comics, who wouldn't want to do that? So of course I'd be open to and love that. But I got to tell you, and I'm not saying this, you know, there he goes saying it, but it really is true. I feel so lucky to do what I do and to be working with the people that I work with currently. Doing this voice work, Transformers, and having done it, it's the best gig in the world. And, I'm just happy that it's one of these things where every actor thinks, I wonder when they're going to find out, like, next week people are just going to stop hiring me. They're going to realize, why are we hiring me? Every actor has that little voice in their head, no matter how successful they've been over their career. So you just want things to continue. But, yeah, if I had to choose and if I could have a crystal ball, yeah, I wouldn't turn down something in the Marvel Universe. That would be a lot of fun.
Well, one of the things that this is, as of this recording, is breaking news. Marvel's considering dropping Iron Fist to do a Punisher Netflix series. So,
really?
Get your foot in the door there, because the Punisher is awesome. But, Mitchell, I got to thank you so much for spending time with us today on This Week in Geek. And like I said, thank you for being so genuine. It's nice to have, like I said, someone who's so excited to be a part of all this.
Well, you know what? We should never forget that it's not a birthright to be working in this business. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes people forget. You know, that we're fortunate to do what we do. We get to play for a living and earn a living at it. It's one of those things you grow up doing silly voices and doing fun voices as a kid, and then you realize, oh, my gosh, I can make a career out of this. How lucky am I? So, like I said, I really try and appreciate and be in the moment to enjoy all the things that I'm lucky enough to have, you know?
Well, Mitchell, I want you to hold in line for just a moment, okay?
Sure.
All right, guys. Well, that was my interview with Mitchell Whitfield. Seriously, go check out some of his stuff. Like I said, go back and watch the TMNT movie back from 2007. Underappreciated in the Turtles franchise. Plus, you can catch him every week in Transformers Robots in Disguise as Fix-It. And hell, just keep an eye on his IMDb page. He does a lot of stuff. And he actually did a video game this year. He was in Lego Jurassic World. So, hey, check out that. So, anyway, guys, there's going to be a lot more cool stuff coming up on the site this week. As you know, Halloween happens in just a couple of days. So, it'll be me James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd, Ryan, and Andrew Roebuck will be talking about the Evil Dead franchise as we approach Halloween, and maybe some other stuff coming up on the site as we approach that. And our topic show for the month of November, I think we're probably going to do Fallout, because that's a huge franchise, which has a new game coming out in just a few weeks. And then after that, of course, it's got to be Star Wars. So anyway, guys, until next time, I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. We'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
You guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by replying to @ThisWeekInGeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.